All right. I'll tell you what. This is fun. Okay, everyone, I want to introduce Donna Clark, who is going to be facilitating our next session on emergency preparedness.
All right. Hey, everybody. How many of you have thought about natural disasters in your area? How many of you are prepared? Yeah. Have you ever experienced a fire?
Yes.
Or a flood? Yeah. So today, we have a wonderful speaker with us who is going to talk to us about these things and how, especially people who have low vision or who are blind, can prepare and be more prepared for these happenings. One second. So, today we have with us Crystal Goodwin. She has worked in the emergency management field for the last 4 years, and she's focusing on disability disaster planning and consideration. She holds a BS in Emergency Administration and Disaster Planning from the University of North Texas and has published research surrounding a special needs registry in Texas. This is very good. So I think it's time that we let Ms. Crystal speak to us.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. As Donna so kindly introduced me, my name is Crystal Goodwin. I work for the Fairfax County Department of Emergency Management and Security, and we're just gonna go over some generalized emergency preparedness today. Some of this will be applicable to everybody in the room. Some of this will only be applicable to our Fairfax County residents once we get later into the presentation. However, the programs I do talk about in Fairfax County hypothetically should be available in most other jurisdictions, and if you do need help connecting with those jurisdictions, I am more than happy to try and help people out. So in Fairfax County, we have a program called Ready Fairfax, which is our preparedness program. It's essentially just designed to educate and empower community members to respond, to prepare for, and know how to recover from disasters. And we also talk about all kinds of emergency threats and, of course, those natural disasters that you kind of think about. We do presentations, we do outreach events, so things like this. So I always like to start off all presentations with kind of talking about some common terms of disasters. I think it's really important that everyone has the same working vocabulary, because I, for one, know that a lot of acronyms get thrown around, a lot of things sound similar but are not the same. So when we talk about disasters, we have the term disaster and then we have the term hazard. A disaster is essentially once something has occurred in a place. So once a hurricane has hit an area, that is a disaster. The hurricane itself is a hazard. I know that's kind of confusing, but essentially we wouldn't call a hurricane that stays out in the ocean a disaster because it hasn't affected anyone or anything. As soon as that hits land, however, now we're talking about a disaster because people and property are involved. When we talk about emergencies, these are your everyday occurrences. Well, hopefully not every day on a personal level, but every day on a societal level. Those are your ambulance calls, your fires, all of those kinds of things. When we talk about preparedness, we're talking about any action that you can do to be ready for, unfortunately, the inevitable. All of us will face an emergency at some point. More than likely, you will or have already faced a disaster. And then we're gonna talk about watch versus warning. So these are the two words that are commonly used when you get those text messages or those phone calls to your phone about what is about to happen in your area. This is also sometimes what goes over the TV. So the easiest way that we like to explain it is a watch is ingredients. It has the ability to become something, all of the right things are in the right places, but nothing's actually occurring. So this is when you get a tornado watch. It means the atmosphere is right. We have the right type of storm for a tornado to form, but there's no tornado on the ground. When we talk about warnings, however, your cake is baked. It's there, it's ready. Whether you like it or not, it's showing up. So when you see a tornado warning, that is a sign that a tornado funnel cloud has already started to occur or is already on the ground. So if you see a watch, be prepared. But if you see a warning, it's time to take action. So I know this is not applicable to everybody. However, most of the surrounding areas has the same hazards as Fairfax County. So we're gonna talk about the different hazards, which once again is things that could happen or could impact the area. So our most common are thunderstorms, hurricanes. We have not seen an actual hurricane eye in the area in a very, very long time, but that does not mean it's impossible. However, what we do see all the time is flooding. And you may think, flooding doesn't happen that often. Well, I can tell you, I think there was 4 flooding events in Fairfax County alone this year. We had a couple severe ones in July and August. We also have, of course, the winter weather, those extreme snow or ice storms. We're seeing more and more extreme heat, so those really hot heat waves, which can also affect people with disabilities even more. If you don't know, a lot of medications have a dehydrating effect, which means you are more likely to get heat stroke or suffer heat injury. So it's really important to know what your medication may cause. This area also can and does get tornadoes. If you didn't know that, that's a fun fact. And we also do see earthquakes in the area. So it's just important that these are all of the things that could happen. And when we talk about preparedness, we talk about generalized preparedness. So what can we do to prepare for roughly all of these things? And that way we're not trying to prepare individually for each one. So preparedness tips. This is the meat and the bones of my presentation. First off, we do have something called a CERG is the short term for it. The full long term is the Community Emergency Response Guide. This is a guide that we have created in Fairfax County that helps people in our community create a family emergency plan and a family emergency kit. The kits we'll talk about a little bit more in detail, but an emergency plan is essentially what does your family plan to do if you have to stay inside and shelter in place, or if you have to do evacuations. It helps you collect important contact information for yourself, your family, and anybody outside your home that would be contacted in case of an emergency. And it helps you learn actions to take before, during, and after the emergencies, and also how to get involved if you are a Fairfax County resident. This is available on our website and should have alt text. If it doesn't, please let me know and I will fix that. So when we talk about preparedness, we talk about preparedness in 5 steps for the community. Step 1 is make a plan. Step 2 is practice your plan. Step 3 is to create an emergency kit. Step 4 is to stay informed, and step 5 is to get involved. So we'll go through these. Step 1 is to make a plan. An emergency plan, like I said, should involve everybody in your family or everybody in your community. And this is how you're going to either stay at home or get out if you had to. Your plan should include any contact information like your family, your friends, and also what some people don't think about is your healthcare providers. Because in the worst case scenario, if you're having to leave, and for whatever reason you're having to leave for a prolonged period of time and you no longer have enough medication, people can order emergency medication for you in terms of like sheltering staff. However, they cannot order that medication if they don't know your provider's name and information because they cannot prescribe you new medication. Additionally, it should involve any important medical information. This is a list of your medications that you take, any conditions you may or may not have. It should have your emergency meetup locations. So if I have to evacuate, where am I going? Where am I meeting my friends and family? And this gets really important if we're talking about sustained loss of power or cell phone outages. If I can't call somebody, where am I going that I know they are also going to be at? It needs to have your emergency kit locations. So we suggest at least having 2, if not 3 emergency kits. And I know that seems extensive, but we suggest 1 in-home, 1 in the most common vehicle you are in, and 1 at work if you have a secondary work location. This ensures that no matter where you are, you have access to some of that material. And also remember to include any pet considerations, whether that be service animals or just family pets. It's important to know that you're not gonna leave without them, so you need to plan with them in mind. Some disability and access and functional needs considerations we discuss is any information on your DME or your durable medical equipment. And what we mean by this is if you have hearing aids or anything that is special to you specifically, have the information on those numbers, the wonderful like lot numbers that you have on them, or any size considerations, because if once again, worse comes to worse and you are without that DME or it gets damaged in any way, having the brand information and the model information speeds up the process of you getting a replacement a lot quicker. You also want to consider any communication needs or special considerations for first responders, neighbors, or other support staffs. So if you communicate via a tablet or American Sign Language, or if you know anybody who does, it's important to make those notes so that way everybody can communicate where they are comfortable. And finally, it's important to try, and I do say try because I know sometimes it is impossible, to include multiple accessible routes in and out of your home. Some places only have one accessible location out of their house. However, if you do have two, it's important to map out both, because say in case of a fire, if your one and only planned accessible route is out of commission and you can't get past, how do you plan on getting out? So we always try to suggest at least two ways of exit. Step two is to practice your plan, which may seem silly until you think about it. Because when an emergency happens, that is the last time you want to be doing something for the first time. Mm-hmm. Because you are going to be stressed, things are going to be scary, you're going to be trying to think about, but did I give the right photo album, and do I have all of the people I'm supposed to have, and is this here, and is that here? You don't want it to also be the first time you're trying to figure out if your evacuation plan works. So it's important to practice your evacuation routes, how to get to your actual meeting spots, and at least one to two ways on how you're planning to contact your emergency contacts. Once again, if phone lines are out, do you at least have a plan to get to the same place? Also, can you get to your emergency evacuation place without Google Maps? Can you get it without, you know, having the ability to have those wayfinding? Some also things that we talk about when we talk about practicing your plan is if you do have a guide dog or a service animal of any kind, practice with them. I do know, and this is obviously not everybody, but some people will train their service dogs to understand the tone of a fire alarm, and that means it's time to leave and how to get out of the apartment or that house. So it's important that if they are integral to your well-being, they are included in your plans and your practicing. Step three is to create an emergency kit. This is where we really get into things that you can do starting today. An emergency kit should have everything that you need to be on your own for several days. And that seems scary, but in cases of major disasters, the average time for somebody to actually come and be able to physically help you in person is 24 to 72 hours. So that's 1 to 3 days. So we suggest having at minimum 3 days worth of supplies ready to go. You can also make an emergency go bag, as we were talking about. That's for easy access, something that you can grab and leave. A lot of people put these in backpacks near the front of their house. And when we talk about emergency kits, the first question we get is, well, what do I put in it? That kind of falls into three main categories. You have food and water, you have first aid, and then you have anything that revolves around communication. So when we talk about food and water, this is a 3-day supply of food and water for each person. If you're wondering how much water is a person, the standard, which as we know, please adjust to your family and your needs, is a gallon of water per person per day. So that is 3 gallons of water per person. That does not include any animals. That adds another gallon per day for your animals. And that does seem like a lot. You will be surprised of how much water you drink or how much you need for cooking. And then, of course, the 3 days of food as well. And it's important to include any pet food or any specialty food. So if somebody has food sensitivities, food allergies, make sure when you're actually making these things that you're planning for those. And also, make sure you're packing things that you actually want to eat. Because some people will be like, I'm just going to pack a bunch of canned food. And that's great because canned food is shelf stable and you usually don't need to cook them. But nothing is worse than being stuck in an emergency situation and it's only 24 hours without the grocery store and all you're stuck with is a can of kidney beans. Like, you don't want to be eating that. So make sure to include food that you actually want to eat. Then we talk about first aid. Of course, this is a basic first aid kit. Secondly, think about all of your medications. This includes prescriptions or vitamins. This is a very difficult thing to do because I know some insurances will only do things on a 30-day basis. However, there's two routes that we do suggest. It does not work every time. I don't want to sit up here and promise you things that are going to work for you and then it doesn't work for you because that's not fair. Step one is sometimes you can ask your doctor for trial sizes of your medication. This is usually very short amounts of medication, usually that like 3-ish days. Perfect. Put that in your emergency kit. The other thing to think about is usually people will fill your prescriptions 3 days early, especially if it's a 30-month or 30-day month instead of a 31-day month. Do that for 3 months. Now you have 3 extra days worth of medication. However, it's important to remember that when you put these things in, they do expire just like your normal medication. So we always suggest to renew your bags the same time that time change happens. So when that fall forward or spring backwards happens, make sure to go through your emergency kits and check that nothing's expired, renew that medication. And once again, make sure that somebody didn't get into all the snacks that you packed and ate them. We speak from experience. One of my colleagues, his kid or her son, that's like his most important thing, is that he has to have his favorite snacks in his bag at all times. And then they'll go check it and he snuck into the bag to eat the snacks. We talk about things like hand sanitizer, paper towels, dental care, soap, and personal hygiene. And then it's also important to remember any hearing or vision things you may need. You probably have an old pair of glasses that may not be perfect, but they're semi-functional. If you're not using them every day, put them in these kits. That way, if something terrible happens to your main pair of prescription glasses or hearing aids, you have a backup. It may not be the perfect backup, but it is a backup. And then we talk about communication. So this is radios with batteries, because if we have no power, how are you going to find out what weather is happening and what's going on? This is chargers and portable chargers, because let's be honest, if the power is out, you're still gonna want your phone. This is things like document bags. These can be waterproof, so that way you can put all of your important documentation. That way, if it ever floods or leaks, they stay dry and safe. And any assistive devices that you may have. So this is things like wheelchairs, canes, harnesses for your service animals, and all of that. Once again, these don't have to be the perfect backup. Nobody expects you to go out and buy things, especially since they can be expensive when we're talking about medical devices. But having some form of backup is better than having no backup. Some more disability considerations we can talk about when we're talking about these go kits is backup batteries for any of your DME. This is one that is very difficult. I don't have a perfect answer, to be completely honest. Getting more than one or more than two batteries for durable medical equipment is insanely hard, especially with insurances. I know that. We're talking about safe foods. Once again, you don't want to be stuck with a bunch of food that you or the people in your family aren't going to eat. We talk about service animal supplies. So this is food, water, harnesses, anything that makes their ability to do their job possible. We talk about puppy pads are similar, because if you're sheltering in place, you cannot take your animals outside to go to the bathroom. So if you are stuck in your house for an undetermined amount of time, how do you plan on taking care of that? We talk about whistles or signal devices. So if you need to tell somebody where you are, what is a loud way you can do that? We talk about sensory items. So for people with sensory sensitivities, do you have fidgets or anything else that brings them comfort? For people who are blind and low vision specifically, we actually suggest that you can use zip ties or similar tactile devices to mark what bag that you need to grab in case of emergency. That way you're not trying to fumble around and remember which backpack in the closet is the right backpack. And then we also talk about vital documents, especially if you need them in accessible formatting. So if you need something in large print, do you have it on hand? And if you can make a copy of it, make that copy. Because a lot of people will talk about vital documents and say, well, I'm fine because all of my vital documents are in a fireproof safe at the back of my closet, which is great. Don't get me wrong. However, in case of a fire, you're not getting to that. Until the fire marshal has cleared it and done their investigation, they will not let you go and get that safe. And then, if it's a long thing, you can hire somebody to go get it for you, but that is a very, very expensive service. So we always suggest keeping backup documents when you can. Keep something with friends or family that may not live in the same house as you, or some people just prefer doing things like safety deposit boxes. Step 4, which is really important, is stay informed. If you don't know what's happening, you can't prepare for it. Don't wait for disasters to strike, because once again, that is going to be one of the most stressful days of your life. The last thing you want to be doing is fumbling around trying to figure out how you're going to get the information on one of the most stressful days of your life. For Fairfax County specifically, we have a program called Fairfax Alerts. You can in fact sign up online. These come as text messages or as phone calls. For Fairfax Alerts specifically, not only will it give you weather updates, but you can also sign up to get things like traffic updates. Those are geolocated, so you don't get anything that's like from across the county. You will only get something for that rough area. And you can also sign up for a secondary location, say if you work in Fairfax County. I can say with confidence, every jurisdiction has an emergency alerting system. So if you do not live in Fairfax County, simply search up your jurisdiction, whether that be a city or a county, and emergency alerts, and you will be able to sign up. If you leave only doing one thing from today, if you're not signed up for alerts, I really hope that it is alerts that is the one takeaway from today. Additionally, in Fairfax County, we do have an emergency preparedness newsletter and a blog. Those are just some supplemental information. Those are also available on our website. And then, I'm very sorry, but this is more Fairfax County stuff. Unfortunately, not everybody does this. Fairfax County has two programs. It's called Community Connect and the Emergency Health Profile. Community Connect is an address-based program. You can go in and put information about you and your household, and that is anything from health considerations, family makeup, if you have somebody with mobility issues, you can write that they have mobility issues, what room of the house they're likely to be in, if you would like to, and have an electronic door lock or an electronic garage code, you can put in the code information. That way, if the fire department ever has to show up to your house, they don't have to break in your doors. It has the same security system as online banking. So that's that. The only people who have access to Community Connect are 911 dispatch, our first responders, and two people in our office. I am one of the two. I promise I don't peruse personal information for fun on Fridays. Then we have the Emergency Health Profile. It is a similar program, but this program is phone number based. So anytime somebody calls from that number, that health information will pull up for 911 dispatch. Community Connect is address-based, meaning when anybody calls for a certain address, that information will pull up. It does not matter if it is one singular person or somebody who's driving by. If you are a business owner, you can also sign up for Community Connect for your business, and that will give you a text message alert when any 911 call is dispatched to that area. Additional resources, Dominion Energy, if you are a Dominion Energy customer, does have an electrically powered medical equipment form. That is a mouthful that I did not realize until I'm saying it out loud. I can't guarantee that it actually does anything. Obviously, it's not a program we run, but that is a program that you can sign up to let your energy company know that you do have a energy dependency. And the same thing exists for NOVAC. Then we also have ready.gov/people with disabilities. This is a federally run program that has more preparedness tips for generalized disabilities. The state of Virginia has their own website. And then once again, we just shout out Community Connect because it's a really great program that we find very useful. Step five is to get involved. There are a ton of organizations. If you are like really gung-ho about this whole emergency preparedness thing, there are tons of organizations who need volunteers or who rely on volunteers. I'll just shout out a few, but some of these are hyper-local, so I would suggest that you reach out to your emergency management agency. I'm sure they would love to tell you about their programs. There's CERT, which is a response program. There is, our office has a volunteer corps, so those volunteers help us go out to community events and do outreach things like this. I'm not a volunteer, I am paid staff. I just gotta give that out there. There's also the Medical Reserve Corps. The fire department has their own. The police department has their own program. And then in Fairfax County, we also have a team called VET, which is our Volunteer Emergency Response Team. And this team is in charge of actually helping us run volunteer reception centers after a disaster. So helping get even more volunteers into the county and ready to go if something were to occur. And that was me ranting at you for like 20 minutes. So now it's time for you to rant back at me. Does anybody have questions, concerns, want to talk about stuff? Absolutely. Sir in the white shirt.
How far away should you put your gathering point?
So that is a great question. I don't think there's a golden rule for how far it should be, but we do want it to be at least a couple of blocks because you don't want it to be, if your place catches fire, well, so did the neighbors. So it's kind of useless to go to the neighbors. It's also one of those things you can make multiple points. So if it's a hyper-localized emergency, yes, we can go to the corner store. But if something major happened, we're going to go to this place that is much farther. There's not, unfortunately, like a golden standard. I can be like, this is the perfect answer.
So I was wondering about documentation. When you talk about the types of documents, how many, I know in this age of fraud and identity theft, I wouldn't want to have too many of my documents, but what do you suggest as far as the types of documents and how many, or especially you said, like keeping a set at work, keeping a set in the box at home, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to emergency documentation, we essentially suggest that you have at least two copies, so one at home and one at a non-home location. It does not have to be work. This is where it can be good if you have a family member who lives out of town or a friend who lives out of town or one of those safety deposit boxes. I don't suggest that you make like seven copies of your social security card and lead them everywhere you go. Nor do we usually suggest that you put them in your car specifically. Those are things where we say you should have backup clothes and food in three locations. You do not need all of your documentation in three locations, especially if you're not confident in their security. But essentially, you just want at least one copy that is not at your residence, because if something happens to your residence, you want to be able to get those. Because unfortunately, a lot of disaster aid you cannot have unless you have proof of identification. And in some cases, you also need proof of residency. And residency in terms of you live at the address you say you live at. And so proof that you have paid a bill in your name. Because for example, the Red Cross, who comes in and sometimes will give emergency funding for people to stay in a hotel for a couple days if their house or their apartment goes on fire. Unfortunately, one of the things you do have to do is prove that you live at a location that actually was on fire. So this is unfortunately a problem that I don't have the solution to, but does happen in multi-generational houses where only one generation is on the bills, and then people who are also adults and live in home will not qualify for services because their name isn't on anything that proves that they're a resident.
Hi, the question I have is, by any chance, the incredible document that you were actually must have been speaking from to convey all that information to us, is it possible to have that shared to our organization?
Absolutely. So I have, this is a PowerPoint, so not everything that I spewed at you was on the PowerPoint. However, there is a PowerPoint. I have already emailed it, so that way they can send it out. That entire PowerPoint should be done with alt text because there are some images. They are decorative, but I did go through and manually did all the alt text because PowerPoint didn't want to do its automated alt text. And let's be honest, the automated alt text isn't always the best anyways. When that gets sent out, if for any reason at all, some of the alt text is messed up or the accessibility hasn't saved, please, please, please have somebody email me and let me know. I am more than happy to fix any problems that may have with it.
Hi, I'm a Fairfax resident and I have completed the CERT program 8 years ago. And it was an eye-opener what we as the visually impaired can and cannot do. Are there any programs to teach us how to do first aid, CPR, self-defense for the visually impaired? I have been looking for so long and couldn't find anything.
So what I will say is I don't know any that directly off the top of my head. What I can do is I'll get your contact information from you before I leave today, and I can try and find out if there are any specific programs in the county. There's not any that are immediately coming to mind, but if they do exist, for example, first aid is more than likely going to be either taught by our fire department or by our health department. That wouldn't be a training that the emergency management department would hold. And if it does not exist, I will kindly put in the suggestion to our partners that it probably should.
I was asking Crystal if my understanding is, my daughter took it once, Fairfax County Police, I think, does a rape prevention course. I think it's an 8-week course, and that teaches you a lot about self-defense. So if that in particular one, you know, the county used to have. I'm not sure if they're running it still or not.
I will say the county police department does have a self-defense course, especially a women's self-defense course. I do not believe it is specifically targeted for individuals who are blind or low vision, is what I will put out there.
Yes. So my question is, so if we do need to go to a shelter, my understanding is some shelters are not able to handle certain disabilities. How are we going to know what shelter we can go to? Or are shelters now all required to be set up for people with all disabilities?
So what I will say is Fairfax County specifically is absolutely all of our sheltering locations will be accessible for all forms of disabilities. And if somebody tells you that they're not, I promise I'm going to be the one getting the phone call and I will make sure that that's corrected. I will say all sheltering operations are legally required to abide by ADA. So if that is not happening, that is a problem. I can't speak to anything outside of my county because obviously I don't see those programs. However, all of our sheltering operations for the county are accessible to all forms of disabilities, and if a reasonable accommodation needs to be made, it will absolutely be made. And I will say just a little sneak peek, we are also working on a program and some positions for people who would specifically be staffing shelters to their sole job will be accessibility and accommodation requests, and that comes from disabilities and things like language access. So if you are a Fairfax County resident or end up in a Fairfax County shelter, they will absolutely be accessible to all forms of disabilities regardless.
Are you ready? Hi, this is Caroline Crystal. Crystal, I have a question. You mentioned proof of citizenship, proof of identity and proof of residency forms for if there is a disaster. Would pictures of those proofs, whether it's a picture of the documentation or a picture of a piece of mail that has your name and address on it, would that suffice rather than the actual piece of paper?
So unfortunately, that is a sometimes, maybe, not all the time kind of question. It kind of depends on what you are requesting assistance for and from. Some places will take photocopies, some places won't. I don't have an exact list of like which is which in that case. My suggestion would be at least have like certified copies. And that's, once again, obviously you can have your original copies in home and then have a certified copy somewhere outside of your residence.
Okay.
But unfortunately, that is very much a, like, it depends on the organization and it depends on the situation.
Okay. Part two is in response to the self-defense that people were asking about. My understanding, I was going to sign my daughters up and asked the question. I said, I was blind, my daughters are not. And they said, absolutely, please sign up. Because one of the comments that was made, when you are, for lack of a better word, when you are attacked, generally everyone is not attacked and is expecting it. Meaning, maybe we're all kind of in the same boat. We're all blind to the fact of being attacked. So the reaction that we would have would be very much what a sighted person would have to react. You have to kick them where? You have to punch them or elbow them where? You have to know where those places are. If someone's coming from behind, then we're all blind when we're being attacked, whether you're sighted or not. So that was just a comment that was given to me when I was asking about these kind of self-defense classes.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of Fairfax County, I will absolutely get like a solid answer on that. I will reach out to our police department and just ensure. I do not doubt that that is their policy. I highly, honestly anticipate that is likely their policy, but I will make sure, because once again, it's not our program. It's not run by my agency, so I don't want to speak on behalf of something that I cannot guarantee.
So back in 2007, 2008, I also did the CERT program and got certified, and also Red Cross did their CPR and all that. And when I started going around and doing, you know, the same kind of talk that Miss Crystal is doing today, it was kind of like up to me. I was able to meet people and find people that were visually impaired. There's definitely visually impaired people who teach self-defense. And also like Miss Carol was saying, they're, especially like when it comes to disasters and attacks, and also even CPR, there's a certain point where you kind of do muscle memory. So the more you do, the more you go by what you know as opposed to what you see. So, and so I think, you know, the whole program for me was so helpful and amazing. But the thing that in a disaster situation where there's not a lot of electricity and stuff, they really do try, they kind of go old school with paper and pencil and stuff like that. So without, you know, something that's charged, it's going to be hard for people with visual impairments to be anything other than, you know, a helper when it comes to it, because they do a lot of paperwork and stuff like that to keep things straight, as opposed to, you know, typing it into a computer or anything like that. So that was kind of my frustration, was when it came down to the real disaster, not having avenue of where I could see myself, you know, in it, in a real disaster, in a hurricane, and when all the power and the lights have gone out and stuff like that. So, you know, maybe working on, you know, finding our place in that area when something really does go down, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say the CERT program is amazing. We also, I feel like I've now said this like about five different things. We do not run the CERT program. But I can absolutely, if anybody is interested in that program, get you connected to the correct people. But our agency also does not run CERT.
I'm a Tai Chi instructor in Fairfax County with the Park Authority. And we have to renew our CPR every 2 years. So, and I have never had a problem walking into a class of people who mostly, you know, everybody but me was sighted. And they didn't make special accommodations for me. We just got in there and did our work and got certified and went home. So CPR is not something that should be a problem for people to take.
So I recently saw a broadcast on the TV, and they were talking about protecting your documents. One of the things they talked about was the safes we were discussing earlier. They said they're actually ranked, that some safes will last longer in fires than others. They said it depends on how hot the fire gets. So it's like, how do you know which one you should get? And how do you find out that information?
Yeah, so yes, there are different fire ratings for different fire safes. Unfortunately, it's just one of those things. That fire rating should be in the description of the item that you are purchasing, because it should be just like basic information that is given. I'm not the most knowledgeable about exactly what fire rating is, what degree of fire. I don't have that offhand, but I absolutely could find it if you need it. But fire safes are great, but just know if your home or your apartment catches on fire, nobody is getting that safe for at least a couple of days.
Hi, my name is Susan Hedrick. Could you tell us where you can sign up for Fairfax Alerts and Fairfax Community? I live in Fairfax County for the last 13 years, and I've never heard of them. Thank you.
Well, I'm so happy to be the first to tell you about them. First off, Fairfax Alerts and Community Connect can be found on our website, I believe, and I will make sure that you get the correct link. But if I can remember off the top of my head, it is fairfaxcounty.gov/alerts. Should bring you to the correct one. Also, that link is in the presentation file that I have given both Donna and, I just blanked on your name, I'm so sorry.
Teresa.
Yes, Roseanne. And so that should be available to you guys post this, but I will make sure you get the correct link. I believe it's fairfaxcounty.gov/alerts. But also our website's going under renovations because it's a little bit lengthy currently. And also, if you don't know, the Federal Communications Commission is actually requiring new updates for all governmental websites for accessibility issues as of next year. So if it's a government site, it also should be completely accessible by next year, or else whoever that is gonna have a lot of problems. Ours won't have that problem because I'm making sure it doesn't have that problem. But also, if you don't know, yes, the Federal Communications Commission has also updated accessibility issues for websites, so that will also be updated.
Good. Hi. I know we're talking about people being attacked. Long time ago, when I worked at the VA hospital in Wilmington, Delaware, we had a movie on people attacking us, and the couple things they told us to do was, first of all, try to kick them where it would hurt the most, or punch their eye out. And if you can't do that, throw up on them. And most people would hate that. It would drive them away.
When in doubt, scare them, I guess.
Great idea.
So my question is, for those of us who are not necessarily in the Fairfax County, because like I live in Alexandria, we're separate, even though some of our city is in the county. So if we want to know what is offered in our areas, we would just contact our emergency preparedness organizations or offices?
That would be my suggestion. Every jurisdiction does have an emergency management office. They should have answers for you. And once again, while Fairfax Alerts is Fairfax County specific, I can say without a doubt every jurisdiction has an alerting system, and more than likely your emergency management office is the one who runs that. I will say if anybody lives in a semi-rural area, sometimes your Office of Emergency Management will be under your fire department or your police department, but they should still have the title of emergency manager for like research purposes, is my kind of answer there. I will say Community Connect that we talked about that I think is great, and I would say some people happen to agree, is not available in every jurisdiction. Don't quote me on this, but I believe in our area, it is us, City of Fairfax, City of Arlington, and one other that I can't think of right now. I do not believe City of Alexandria is one that has the program. Mm-hmm. That is my little PSA.
Hi, this is Sam. I wanted to make a couple of comments about self-defense and about first aid. So on the topic of self-defense, I went to a session a couple years ago at the National Convention. I can't remember the name of the organization, but they have a representative here in Virginia named Nathan Green, and he came and spoke with us. He offers both in-person and online classes. And at the time, you know, I don't think we really had enough involvement and engagement to really be able to put something together. But I think if there's enough interest, we may be in a position now where we have the resources to try to pursue something and to reach out to him. But I do think there are some special considerations when it comes to self-defense and blind people that they pointed out to me. For example, you know, who among us has not walked down the sidewalk and somebody's tried to either grab our arm or grab our cane and try to help us, right? And so we don't know, are they trying to help us or is this somebody from ICE grabbing us because of the color of our skin? Right, and so most likely it's probably the former. But you know, the thing we need to learn to do is to de-escalate, right? Because if somebody's trying to help us, we don't want to whack them in the solar plexus and land them on the ground when they're just trying to do something helpful, but they don't know how to help. And so that's a big part of self-defense too, is people trying to help but doing it in a very dangerous way and being able to de-escalate and handle that in a way that's non-invasive and non-threatening. And then on the topic of first aid, I did want to mention that there is a blind woman in Alexandria who is first aid certified, who just released a book, and I don't remember the title of it, but her name is Christine Grassman. That's Grassman, and her book just came out on Kindle, and I'm sure it will eventually be available on Bookshare and Bard, but she is a blind first aid instructor who just released a book about teaching first aid to people with disabilities.
Perfect. Well, thank you for those resources, even for me, myself, and I.
There's also, it's kind of dated now, but Wendy David wrote a book called Safe Without Sight. And that's, I believe that's available on Bard. And that gives you a lot of ideas on self-defense as a people who are blind or low vision.
Perfect. And my last few words for anybody, unless we have more questions, is one, I did bring emergency blankets for everybody to start off your emergency kits. They are outside on the table against the wall. You are free to take one or two. I think I brought enough but start probably with one to make sure I didn't miscount, because, you know, some days you just can't count. Additionally, any of you who were interested in this presentation may have organizations that you would love to hear something similar. We also do accept presentation requests. You can go to our website. There should be a place there, or you are free. Feel free to contact me directly. I will make sure that my contact information is given, and you are all free at any point to contact me either by email or by phone, whatever works best for you. All right, thank you guys so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Crystal. So, do you feel a little more prepared now?
Yeah.
I think we got some more idea of what to do now, huh? Yeah. Maybe make it not quite so scary. Yeah, my church is really big in it, but you would think I would be incredibly prepared, but no. So this gives me a little more encouragement to do that.